Suspense. This is the Man in Black, to bring you men and women in the armed forces of the United Nations, one of America's top spine tinglers. A special rebroadcast of Suspense, produced and directed by William Spear and scored by Lud Gluskin. If you have been with us before, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue you, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation, and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment.
And now, with James Thurber's poignant and strange story, and with the performance of Richard Worf as the man who was a friend to Alexander, and of Geraldine Fitzgerald as his wife Bess, who relates these events to us, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Harry was a laughing, happy-go-lucky fellow before he began to have those dreams. I guess he was pretty much like dozens of other men who go to work every morning, settle down in soft chairs with their newspapers after dinner, and like a weekend in the country now and then. He was fond of easy living and good times. Like everyone else, he talked of the war, rationing, tires, and his golf scores. Until those nightmares began to plague him. At first, I was amused.
You know, I've been dreaming about Aaron Burr every night.
What for?
Well, how do I know what for?
Aaron Burr's a funny person to be dreaming about nowadays. I mean, with all the countries in the world at war with each other.
What's so funny about dreaming?
Maybe you're upset.
Everybody dreams, don't they?
I don't know why you see Aaron Burr in your dreams.
Well, I do.
Where do you see him?
Oh, places. Washington Square, Bowling Green, or on Broadway.
Even here on 55th Street?
No, mostly downtown. I'll be talking to a woman in a Victoria, a woman holding a white lace parasol.
Oh.
And then suddenly there will be Aaron Burr, bowing and smiling and smelling like a carnation, telling his stories about France and getting off his insults.
Who is the woman in the Victoria?
Huh?
The woman. Who is she?
Oh, how do I know? You know about people in dreams, don't you? They're nobody at all or everybody.
But you see Aaron Burr plainly enough, though. I mean, he isn't anybody or nobody or everybody.
Oh, all right. Maybe I don't know who the woman is. Maybe it's Madame Jumel or Mittens. Oh, I'm going to bed.
For a time that evening, I worried about Harry. Not about his dream. Why shouldn't he dream? But I wondered about his health. He looked so unlike himself. I was glad when he went to bed. A good night's sleep was just what he needed, I thought. Sleep. How could I know? The next morning, we were quietly eating our grapefruit when Harry flung down his spoon.
I wish he'd go back to France and stay there. Him and his la-la.
Who, dear? Oh, you mean Aaron Burr. Did you dream about him again?
Yes, and he said la-la to me.
Why should he say la-la?
Look, I was at the tavern and we were drinking ale. I said something funny. I don't remember what it was. Something amusing about what Ben Franklin had said to Washington once. It was one of those things, you know.
No, I don't. Have some more coffee, dear.
No, I don't want any more coffee. I made this remark and everyone laughed. Everyone but Burr, that is. He sort of sniffed and then he said la-la.
Well, why not? I mean, is there anything wrong about him saying la-la?
Well, it's the way he said it. He was sneering at me. They all noticed it.
Who, dear? Who noticed it?
The others, all of them, and Hamilton. I was there with Hamilton. It was swell until Burr came in, Aaron Burr.
I don't see why you dream about him all the time. Don't you think you ought to take some Luminol?
I'm not sick, I tell you. I know what I'm dreaming.
I just thought, well, it's always Burr, and that seems odd.
Why? Why shouldn't I dream about Burr if I want to?
But you don't want to.
No, but I can't help it. Everywhere I go with Alexander, sooner or later, Burr shows up, and he makes those nasty remarks. Last night, he elbowed Alexander out of his way. He did it deliberately.
Alexander?
Hamilton.
Oh, Alexander Hamilton.
Yes, goodness knows I'm familiar enough with him by this time to call him by his first name.
You know, we might go to the old Drover's Inn this weekend. You like it there.
Hamilton has become not only my brother Walter, but practically every other guy I've ever liked.
Don't you like the old Drover's Inn anymore?
Isn't it natural that Hamilton should represent my brother and guys I like? Well, that's natural, isn't it?
Yes. I suppose it is.
Then why are you looking at me like that?
You know, dear, I wish you'd go and see Dr. Fox.
But I don't want to go and see Dr. Fox. I want Aaron Burr to stop sneering at me. And my clothes. He looks at me and his lip curls up and he says, "La, la, Mr. Andrews, what odd taste you have."
I wish you'd go and see Dr. Fox.
I'm going to the zoo and feed popcorn to the rhinoceros. That makes things seem right. For a little while, anyway.
I thought he'd forgotten all about that ancient pistol duel, because for 2 days after that, he lost his haggard, tired look and actually seemed cheerful. But one night, about 5 a.m, he came into my room in pajamas and bare feet, his hair disheveled and his eyes wild.
He got him! He got him! The rotter got him! Alexander fired in the air and smiled at him, just like Walter must have smiled.
Like Walter? Oh, yes, dear, your brother Walter, who was killed in the cemetery.
This was at Weehawken in New Jersey.
What? Your brother?
No, no, Hamilton and Burr, their duel. Hamilton had a white ruff around his neck. Burr was in black tights, French clothes. Alexander lifted his pistol and fired in the air, and he smiled at Burr. And then that fiend from hell took deliberate aim. He took so long. He meant to take his time about it. I saw him grin. Then he pointed his pistol at Alexander and fired. He killed him in cold blood. Foul scum.
Don't. Don't. Here, darling. Take some of these pills.
No, no, I don't want any.
Oh, take it. You'll feel better.
No, I don't want any, I tell you.
Here, swallow. Please, dear, swallow.
All right.
There, that's better.
Cad. A rotten, sneaking cad. He grinned just as you fired. And Alexander clutched himself at the stomach. And then he shook his head and he tried to walk forward. And then he fell with his mouth open. As though he wanted to say something. And Burr stood there. Grinning.
I finally got him to see Dr. Fox. And he said Harry was fine. Heart perfect. Everything. But Aaron Burr did not leave my husband to sweeter or more peaceful dreams. Harry said nothing about it for several mornings, but I could tell he was still being tortured by these ghosts. He brooded over his breakfast. He didn't answer me when I spoke to him.
What was that?
Only my butter knife, dear.
Oh.
Harry, are you still dreaming about that man?
I wish I hadn't told you about it. Forget it, will you?
I can't forget it with you going on this way.
Can't you forget I mentioned it?
What does he do now?
He goes around bragging that he did it with his eyes closed. He says he didn't even look.
Didn't look when?
When he killed Alexander in the duel.
Well, what does...
He claims that he can hit the ace of spades 30 paces blindfolded. Furthermore, since you asked what he does now, he jostles me at parties now.
I think you should stay out of this, Harry. It wasn't any business of yours anyway, and it happened so long ago...
I'm not getting into anything. It's getting into me. Can't you see that?
I see that we've got to get you away from here. Maybe if you slept someplace else for a few nights, you wouldn't dream about him anymore.
I don't know.
Oh, let's go to the country tomorrow. We'll stay at Lime Rock Lodge.
Bess, why can't we visit the Crowleys? They live in the country.
All right, fine.
Bob has a pistol. We could do a little target shooting.
What do you want a pistol for?
Plenty of open space.
I'd think you'd want to get away from shooting.
Yes. Yes, sure, dear, sure.
The vacation seemed a success at first. When we arrived at the Crowley's house in the cab, I thought I'd left my suitcase at the railroad station. Harry laughed his old normal laugh for the first time in many days as he found the bag and handed it to me. And then he leaned over and kissed me.
Good old Connecticut.
Oh, Harry, this is wonderful.
We'll have a grand time.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Harry.
Here they come.
Oh, good old Bob. Remind me of telling that rabbit joke.
Hello, Madison.
I'll take you back, Mr. Andy.
Oh, thanks, Madison. Good to see you.
Thank you, sir.
Hello there.
Well, Bob, how's the old country squire?
Fine, fine. How have you been?
Never better, boy. It's good to be here. Hello, Alan.
Well, you two. I'm glad you've come. It gets kind of dull out here in the hinterland.
Well, Harry and I'll fix that.
Wait until you get one of our extra special cold martinis into. You'll feel ship-shaped then.
Still know how to mix them, huh?
Better than ever. Get lots of practice these long country winters.
Right.
It was grand, seeing Harry's face relaxed and smiling over his cocktail glass. When I went to bed that night, I felt that at last that nasty old business of the dream was over, and I was happy. But when I awoke the next morning, I saw my husband lying rigid on his back, staring at the ceiling.
One Henry Andrews, architect.
What's the matter, dear?
Nothing.
Oh, why don't you go back to sleep, Harry? It's only 8 o'clock and this is the country.
One Henry Andrews, an architect.
What are you talking
That's
about?
That's what he calls me.
Calls you? Who?
One Henry Andrews, an architect. He keeps saying it in his nasty, sneering little voice. One Henry Andrews!
Harry, please don't yell. You'll wake the whole house. It's early. People want to sleep.
I'm beneath him. I'm just nobody. I'm a man in a gray suit. Be on your good behavior, my good man, he says, or I shall have one of my lackeys give you a taste of the riding crop.
Why should he say that to you?
You ask me why?
He wasn't such a great man, was he? I mean, didn't he try to sell Louisiana to the French or something behind Washington's back?
He was a traitor.
Then why worry what he says?
He was a scoundrel, but he had a very brilliant mind.
I was in hopes that you weren't going to dream about him anymore. I thought if we came up here that...
It's him or me. I can't stand this forever.
Neither can I. As I had expected, Harry spent most of the afternoon with Bob shooting at targets. At first, they just aimed at the paper squares. It all seemed to be good-natured and in fun. After a while, Harry stood with his back to the dead tree trunk on which the targets were nailed. Then he walked 30 paces ahead in a stiff-legged manner, and his face was set in stern lines. His revolver was at arm's length above his head when he turned suddenly and fired. Bob dropped to the ground, scared.
What's the big idea, Harry?
But Harry didn't answer. He started to walk back to that dead tree trunk again.
Oh, I get it.
Then, with his back to the target, he began marking off the 30 paces. Bob called to him.
I think they kept their arms hanging straight on. I don't think they stuck them up in the air.
But my husband continued to count off. At the 30th step, he lowered his arm, wheeled about suddenly, and fired from his hip.
Hey, what are you doing?
Two of the shots missed the trigger, the last one...
Hey, watch out!
Like a mechanical man or someone in a trance, Harry began to walk back to the tree again without a word, his lips tight, his eyes bright, his breathing coming fast.
Look, it's my turn, Bob.
But Harry about-faced and stalked on. This time, when he fired, his eyes were closed. Poor Bob didn't know what to make of his strange behavior.
Good heavens, man. Give me that gun, will you?
Without a protest, Harry let him take it. For the first time, he spoke.
I need a lot more practice, I guess.
Well, not with me standing around. Come on, let's get back to the house and shake up a drink. I got the jumps.
I need a lot more practice.
I guess I must have slept soundly that night because I didn't hear him leave the room. He must have crawled out of bed, dressed silently, and crept out of the room. The sun was just coming up, and the light was hard, and the air was cold. Then I heard the shots. Harry! I threw on a dressing gown and ran downstairs. The Crowleys were in the hall.
What's happening here?
Is Harry all right?
Certainly sounds like it.
Where is he? What's he doing?
Well, it sounds as though he's out behind the studio shooting.
Oh, Alice.
Oh, take it easy, Beth. Bob will go out and get him. Well, maybe he had a nightmare or walked in his sleep.
No, he never walks in his sleep. He's awake all right.
Well, let's go down and get some coffee. He'll need some.
I'll need some, too. What the dickens is the matter with him, anyway?
Oh, I don't know. I'm so sorry to
be... You go get him, Bob.
At your service, madam, alive or dead.
Bob, stop it.
Well, okay, I'll do my best. Hey, Harry! Harry! Harry, what's the matter with you?
Huh? What?
What the dickens are you doing out here in this freezing air?
What?
Pulling your pants and your shirt and your shoes on.
I'll get him one of these nights.
What are you...
Get him one of these nights.
By this time, I was really frightened. When we returned to the city, Harry was the picture of gloom. Our first night back. I looked at him as he lay on the chaise lounge in my bedroom in his blue dressing gown, smoking a cigarette. He was haggard and tired, and he kept biting his lower lip. I mixed a scotch and water nightcap for him.
No, thanks. No liquor. I need a steady hand. Look, watch my hand. Does it tremble? Is it steady?
Yes, very.
That's good. That's very good. You need a steady hand, you know.
For what, dear?
Oh, things.
Harry, will you sleep in my room tonight?
No. You'll keep shaking me all night to keep me awake. You're afraid to let me meet him.
Are you still on that?
Why do you think everybody's better than I am? I can outshoot him the best day he ever had.
Of course, dear.
In the waistcoat, right next to the middle button. He has three big pearl buttons on his waistcoat. Came from France.
Why don't you dream about somebody else? Anybody else,
you'd like
please.
That. You'd like that, wouldn't you? You'd like to have me dream about somebody who wouldn't hurt a fly. Somebody like that because you knew I'd never get in a duel with him.
A duel? You're dreaming of a duel now?
Ever since Hamilton died, Burr knows I hate him. It's nearly over now.
Harry.
It's him or me. I'll get him, the rotter.
But Harry...
I know I'll get him. I have a modern pistol. He has to use an old-fashioned single-shot muzzle loader.
Is that quite fair?
Fair? What do I care whether it's fair or not? Was it fair the way he shot Alexander? Was it?
Don't be mad with me, Harry.
I'm sorry, darling.
I'm very unhappy.
I'm sorry, darling.
And I'm worried sick.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. Don't cry. Please don't cry. It upsets me when you cry. And you mustn't be upset. I mustn't be upset. I must be very calm and rested. My hand must be steady tonight. Especially tonight.
I'm so worried, Harry.
Oh, don't worry about me. I'll be all right. I'll be fine. My hand is like a rock.
Later, when I kissed him goodnight, I knew it was really goodbye. He didn't say anything, and neither did I. It's just that he seemed so far away, in another world. And each moment I felt that he was becoming more and more remote. Something told me he wasn't coming back. I couldn't sleep. After an hour of tossing and turning, I went to Harry's room. He was sleeping peacefully. I sat down in his chair and watched over him for a long while. Then finally, I must have fallen asleep.
Beautiful morning.
It was about 5 a.m. when I awoke. Harry was talking in his sleep.
Oh, yes. Doctor? Good of you to come, Doctor. Yes. Often misty at this hour.
Harry?
Are they loaded? Splendid.
Harry? Wake up.
Yes, I'm perfectly ready. Is Mr. Burr... He is. Good. Shall we proceed? No, I do not care to make any statement.
Wake up.
Very well.
Harry.
I understand it perfectly. 10 paces. Turn and fire at the dropping of the handkerchief. Yes. 10 paces.
Harry.
Thank you for acting as my second, Mr. J. It's, of course, extremely good of you. Very well, then. I'm quite ready. One. Two. Three. Four.
Harry! Harry, please!
Five.
Don't, Harry!
Six. Seven. Eight. Nine. 10.
Oh. Harry. Harry, dear. Harry. Fox was puzzled when he examined Harry.
It's extraordinary. His heart was as sound as a dollar when I saw him the other day.
It seemed to be fine, Dr. Fox.
I can't understand it.
What?
Why, his heart stopped as if he'd been shot.
Shot?
Yes, of course, there are no gunshots.
Shot?
Well, Mrs. Andrews,
you... Shot?
Oh, no, you'll have to calm yourself. You can't help him now.
I should have known it would happen. I kept staring at Harry's right hand. The three fingers next to the index finger were closed stiffly on the palm, as if gripping the handle of a pistol. The taut thumb was doing its part to hold that invisible handle tightly and unwaveringly. But it was the index finger which held my eye the longest. I looked carefully to make sure that I was right. Yes. Yes, it was so. That index finger was curved inward slightly, as if it were about to press the trigger of a pistol. So there had been a duel after all. Perhaps there was no gunshot wound, but Harry had been shot as surely as he was dead. Dr. Fox saw me staring and spoke to me.
What are you looking at, Mrs. Andrews?
Harry never even fired a shot. Aaron Burr killed him the way he killed Hamilton.
What are you talking about?
Aaron Burr shot him through the heart. I knew he would.
Yes, but there's no evidence.
I knew he would! Then Dr. Fox put an arm around me. He looked at me gently and a bit frightened, the way I used to look at Harry when he told me about his dreams. He led me to his assistant and whispered something. He thought I didn't hear him, but I did.
She's crazy. Stark, raving, crazy.
I let the assistant take me away. Maybe he thought I was crazy, too. But now, I knew. Aaron Burr got Harry. Just as he had killed Hamilton in that old quarrel long ago. I knew he would. I knew he would!
And so closes A Friend to Alexander, starring Geraldine Fitzgerald and Richard Worf. The James Thurber story, which was tonight's tale of...
Suspense. Now, we of Suspense bring especially to you men and women in the armed forces of the United Nations a preview of our next tale to further intrigue you and stir your nerves until you hear the entire story at the same time 7 days from now. So here it is, your special preview of a portion of next week's story of Suspense.
On this particular night, I'm standing in front of the Broadway Lindy's with my nose practically pasted against the window. It's late, and I'm hungry. I've been pounding the pavements all day doing the rounds of the manager's offices. You'd think a good hoofer like I ought to be able to land something with all the shows on the big street. But here I am, standing like General Sherman's statue in front of Lindy's, looking at the pasted-up menu and mentally overindulging in a big, thick, juicy T-bone steak smothered with onions. That comfortable crowd inside there can toy politely with their chicken sandwiches and their shrimp cocktails for all I care. Just give me a T-bone smothered onions. Here I am with 5 cents in my handbag. Literally. Enough for the ride home in the subway. No extra charge for the empty stomach. Well, anyway, I can take my shoes off when I get in the subway. I turn around and give Lindy's one last sorrowful gander and then make for the subway entrance. It's just the time the shows are letting out. And plenty of people from the taxi set are taking the subway home these nights, being short on tires and gas. So I get in that Times Square jam that looks like 5 o'clock p.m. and feels like a Russian pincers movement on the Polish border. I'm getting shoved toward the turnstile, so I quick try to get my handbag open to reach for that lonesome nickel. All of a sudden, I feel something jerk out of my hand. My bag is gone. I try to yell, "Stop! Hey, hey, stop!" I twist around and see somebody, a little guy with short bow legs, running toward the stairs. "Stop that guy! Stop that guy! He's got my purse!" Stop him! I'm trying to break out of the mob and after the purse snatcher, but I'm like the ace of spades being dealt off the bottom of the pack. When I'm finally in the clear a little, I see a tall guy running after that little guy who has my purse. They both disappear around the corner and up the steps. There's plenty of commotion in the crowd. You'd think there was $1 million in my handbag for all the fuss they're making. But I don't stop to think about anything except that I lost my fare home. I take out after the tall guy. And I get to the foot of the stairs, and the tall guy's coming down again. And he's got my bag in his hand. He's smiling a big, wide smile at me, and I'm gazing, gratefully up into his big brown eyes and noticing the way his hairline ain't receding any. Just the guy to go around rescuing ladies in distress. Regular Sir Galahad or somebody.
Is this yours, miss?
Yeah. Gee, how can I ever thank you?
Think nothing of it. Here you are.
What about the guy, the thief?
Oh, there was a cop on the street. He'll take care of him. What about you? You're all right, aren't you?
Oh, sure, sure. I'm all right.
You look kind of pale. I guess it would have been pretty tough to lose your purse that way, especially this late at night.
Oh, I don't know why you bothered, really. Nothing but a nickel in it, anyway. I don't carry much with me when I'm out at night.
A nickel will get you home.
He's smiling at me again, and my heart's saying, oh, brother. We both start towards the mob at the turnstile, and I'm busy hoping he's going my way so we can sort of get better acquainted, you know?
Well, good night. Hang on to that pocketbook now.
Well, aren't you, Well, good night. I'm caught in that mob at the turnstile again, and the train's coming in. Somehow, the way you do in crowds, I lose sight of him. And I gotta concentrate on digging out that nickel to put in the slot. I open up my bag and find the nickel all right, and then my heart almost stops. There in my handbag sits a great big wad of bills, folding money, cash. I managed to get the nickel in the slot and get myself through to the platform and on the train, all the while hanging onto that bag as if there were $10,000 in it. $10,000. Gee, it could be that much. The roll is big enough. My head's going around in crazy circles. The door's closed behind me, and everybody in the car is rushing to find a seat. Over the noise, I hear some contented soul whistling. I grab a seat next to a fat man who's taking up most of it. I sit there hanging onto my bag, not daring to look inside. I tell myself I'm dreaming. There's not really a big roll of bills in there. Extreme hunger is giving me the DTs. How would I get a bankroll as big as your fist? What am I doing with money? Then I remember the purse snatcher. He must have put it there. But why?
And so until next week, when you will hear the rest of this exciting tale, we keep you in suspense.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.